Hey!
Aloha, Mud Babies, Pod People, and inhabitants of the planet Earth. It is I, your Tiki Leader, Steve Mudflap McGrew, returning from Texas. Matter of fact, I don't think I've even talked about going to Hong Kong on the podcast yet. We'll do that on another podcast. And when I say I returned from Texas, I'm returning from a trip to go down and see my mom. My dad passed away. It's been 2 weeks ago now. I went down for the funeral, and it's all good. That's going to be another podcast in itself. I want to do a whole thing about that. So this is not a bad, sad podcast. This is a happy, let's get a comic on and have some good times podcast. That's what this is about today. So I'm glad to be back with you guys. Again, I took too long. I've got to get out of my head and get back into the podcast world. Doing that today with a great comic, I should say. I've enjoyed working with this guy. I did his podcast called Rise to Offend, which he does with a couple other guys that I know. Funny, funny podcast. Check it out if you haven't heard it. But right now, let's go, let's have a little chat with Bobby Wayne Stotts. For those of you that don't know Bobby, if you follow him on Twitter, it is FunBobFatPants, which I think is one of the most brilliant Twitter handles ever, because who doesn't love SpongeBob SquarePants? So when you got the comedy version of it, it just rocks.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
And I'm sure that's one of those Twitter handles that when people hear, nobody ever forgets either.
No. I have people that have come to shows that follow me through Twitter and then end up coming to a show and they'll just, hey, Fun Bob Fat Pants. It's like, it makes me laugh when I hear it.
So yeah. Have you ever thought about changing your stage name to your Twitter handle?
No, but here's a good fact about me. When I first started comedy, I was afraid to use my real name.
Uh-huh.
And I grew up watching Comic View, right? So, of course, I didn't choose any of the good names, so I went with Honky Be Cool.
Honky that Be was, Cool.
Yeah. So there's still people that I went with that name for like 2 months maybe, and there's still people that will call me by that name till this day. So,
Honky Be Cool.
Yeah.
So what drew you to in your comedy upbringing? What drew you to Comic View over all the other comedy that was around?
Well, I grew up in Mississippi. So the town I grew up in Mississippi, we didn't have MTV. They were very they limited the channels we had. The religious people did.
That's communist.
But we still had BET. So Comic View would play every morning before school. Like, my grandfather would get me up at 6 to be at school by 8. You know, he's old school. You don't get right up and go. You get up, you wake up, you eat, you get your day started. So I would wake up at 6, and I would watch A&E Improv. A&E at the Improv at six, from 6 to 7.
Uh-huh.
And then 7 to the time to go to school was Comic View. So I just – the Comic View stuff was a little edgier, you know what I mean, because it was a little free so –
Right, but is that good for a kid to watch right before they go to school? Should you get that shot of urban attitude right before you go, yes, Miss Johnson?
I think so. I went to school and it was almost 50% black folks, 50% white folks. So you would see a lot of that in class. You would see a lot of that from the students. So it was, I guess, it was natural to sit there and watch that kind of attitude.
Right, you know? Right. So, as you know, the point of this show of podcast is remasculate, and that's one of the things that I've loved about watching your stuff and following you on Twitter is you're very much into let's man up, America.
Hell yeah!
And so I saw the other day that you were posting that you need to teach comics how to do stuff. That there's too many comics that just do not know how to fix things, repair things, make things. What's going on there?
One of the big deals that I've struggled with when it comes to comedians is, I know a lot of broke ones, you know what I mean? Like we all count on, our sense of humor to make that living. And then when you get out there and you're driving, you know, 400 miles to make $100 for the night, you start to realize that, this is going to take a while.
Yeah.
You know?
There was a term for that years ago, starving artist.
Right. Well, my girlfriend has a term for that. She calls it stupid. So, you know, a lot of the guys, I'm like, well, you know, why don't you do odds and end jobs? Why don't you do handyman work? Because, you know, the biggest hindrance to being a traveling comedian is having a day job. You got a schedule. So I've tried to get guys to build stuff with me, and no one knows how to do anything. We've tried to do, you know, handyman jobs. No one wants to. As soon as they start to sweat, they're out.
That's hard.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I'm just like, dude, you know, you don't know a trade. Let's say our whole infrastructure crashes tomorrow and we go back to the barter system. How much good are your jokes going to do you when it's time to eat?
Yeah. Watch Road Warrior. Watch Mad Max. And tell me how your act's going to go over there.
Right. Right. So, you know, it's frustrating. And I don't know. We're in an age where technology distracts us from doing things in general. And I think a lot of skills we're not being taught skills anymore.
Well,
you know?
Yeah, we're not. And I think that's a lot of the whole problem with America in general is that we do not teach little boys how to be men. That there's this whole thing about you try to keep the man out of them. They're trying to breed it out. Like testosterone doesn't exist. Don't do that. Don't play with sticks like guns. Don't smack your friend. That's in your DNA.
It is. It is. A buddy of mine, he lets his sons watch wrestling. They're what are they? They're 5 and 3, and those two beat the shit out of each other all day long. And they love every bit of it. You know what I mean? They're wrestling, but it makes them tougher. Right. When they trip and fall now, they don't sit and cry for 5 minutes. You know, they may shed a tear, but they get up, shake it off, and go right back to wrestling.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I just think that's important. You know what I mean? Physical pain teaches you about mental pain.
That's what I say. In my act before, I've talked about life. Teach a little kid to get hurt. Actually, maybe trick them into getting hurt so that they learn life is hard. Move the hell on. Because yeah. I think too many of them are like, oh, it's hot outside. That's because the sun's out, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And and like I tell my girlfriend's kids, it wouldn't be so bright if there wasn't so much sun reflecting off your phone right now. You know, and see what's going on around you. And that's actually been working. Like I've been taking them out, teaching them how to play baseball. You know, she's got 3 kids. 2 of them are girls, and she's got a 6-year-old boy. And the little boy, since he's been raised by women, didn't know how to do any of that stuff, you know, and now I got him out in the shop building stuff out of wood, and I got him peeing outside. He didn't know he could do that.
Well, I didn't even know you could do that. Don't you live in a neighborhood?
I do, but we got a fence.
Okay.
So.
Get up against the fence where nobody can see you.
There you go. So, yeah, I don't know. You know, we just don't know how to do it. We're relying.
Somebody's trying to call you.
Yeah, sorry.
That's okay.
Sending me messages. yeah. I don't know. I think we count on technology being there forever. So
what do you think is one of the skills that every little boy should know right off the bat? Like your advice to a new parent with a baby boy, what do you go? You know what that kid needs to learn right now?
Peeing outside without getting caught. I think that's that one. Not spitting into the wind or peeing into the wind. I think both of them are important.
Yeah. And how to build stuff. So give them Lincoln Logs instead of a cell phone.
I agree 100%. Once again, my girlfriend's son, he is big in the Star Wars. And I'm like, man, all that stuff's cool. But remember, somebody had to build all that stuff. You know, so look into it that way, too. Like not just, oh, this is the Millennium Falcon. How did it work? And then make it work.
Well, don't you think it's strange how everybody is so amazed? Like, this kid is only 2 years old and look how it can work an iPad. you know what I mean?
That's not hard. It's like any other game a kid would play, you know, like building blocks. You know that if you slide your finger this way, you know what I mean? Like this fits here, this works here, and this gets me to what I want to see.
But they're going to be so much farther ahead when they grow up because technology is going, you know, you hear all that. You know, what are they going to do when technology crashes?
I can't wait till it does because then guys like us will rule the world again. we'll be able to get out there.
I can actually set a trout line. I can actually catch fish. I know how to do stuff like my girlfriend and I just had a conversation the other day. My lawnmower's been broke for a while. The grass was growing like crazy, and she's like, "Well, why don't you just buy a new lawnmower if you're not gonna?" And I go, "I'm gonna fix it." Yeah, you've been saying that. You know, I don't think you know how to fix it. Just buy a new one. Let's quit arguing about it. So she comes home the other day. The grass is cut. Did you buy a new lawnmower? No, I fixed the lawnmower. I know how to do it. I just don't like to do it.
Yeah.
So I have the skills, but you're right. In this day and age, it's one of those things like, I just don't really like going out there and getting my hands all greasy and busting my knuckles.
Yeah. And, you know, I grew up in that life as an everyday job. So I agree when people are like, I don't want to do it 7 days a week. But I do think we, like, you know, they constantly build cars more, you know, advanced to the point where the average mechanic doesn't want to touch it. You know what I mean? The shade tree guy doesn't touch it. And instead of the shade tree going, well, I'll just level up and learn more about it. They go, ah, it's got all them fandangled computers on it. Give me a 78 and I got this, you know?
Right.
So they try to breed us out of it too. You know, I think the industry does.
To make it where we absolutely can't change the spark plugs.
And where we rely on them. That way, when they charge us $125 an hour at the mechanic shop, we're like, well, I mean, I don't know how to do it, so it's okay, you know?
Yeah. Or this light came on, so I've got to go down and have it plugged in so they can just reset it.
Yeah.
Not fix anything, just reset the light.
Yeah. And then, like, once again, that's what's shop rate's $125 an hour. You know, somebody got paid to sit while your car's running, your gas is burning, and your AC's on to reset your code.
I would say that pays better than comedy.
Oh, way better. But it's not as much fun, right? I mean,
are you still at that point where it's about the fun? Because sometimes somebody will say, you know, I'll give you this much money for a gig. And I think, all right, that's 3 hours from Denver. I drive a diesel truck at $3 a gallon. That is 200 miles. I don't think that money's going to work out for me.
Yeah. I struggle with that because I love seeing new crowds. I love getting out and meeting new people. And for a while, I had a gig as a catastrophe adjuster where I would go out and work hailstorms, tornadoes. I just spent 3 months in Colorado Springs last year after a big hailstorm. That gig pays me really well. So I would save money and then go out and I could take those $100 gigs. You know what I mean? And it was about the fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I got a kid that's going to be here, be born in about 3 months. So I can't take those 3 month jobs anymore because I got a newborn that's going to be here.
Right.
So now, it's not as much about the fun when I take those road gigs. Unfortunately, I have to think about the dollars, which is kind of a bummer, you know?
Don't you hate thinking about the dollar?
Oh, that's what it drives me crazy. It makes me almost want to just say, fuck it, get off the road and start, you know, 5-6 different little local showcases here and do those every night of the week. Because I could still go just do, I love going to open mics and doing, you know, 5-10 minutes because it's not about the money. I just get to get up there and talk and just do dumb shit. And it's not, I don't have to uphold the contract. You know what I mean?
Right.
You don't stay, fuck, I got 30 minutes and I got to be on point for 30 minutes. You know, you go to a mic and you're like, I got 10, 15 minutes to mess around. I'm going to meander. I'm going to do stuff I wouldn't normally do. So yeah, it still is about the fun, but I have to think about the money, unfortunately.
I am actually finding the fun again. I think for so long for me, it became when you have a headlining position and you have that name and you better be funny every time and you better bring your A shit and don't jack around because we may not hire you back. There's people knocking at the door. So you sort of get in this groove of like, all right, I might try one or two new jokes, or I might try something I wrote today. But recently I've been doing a few of those spots again where I'll just go, yeah, I'll take a bar gig tonight. I'll run over and do a set. And I'm finding I'm having more fun at that, more fun and really serious internal fun than just doing my show.
Yeah, you know, and I agree. Sorry, let me readjust here for a second.
Okay.
From my experiences of doing clubs versus bar shows, with clubs, everybody's there to see you. You know what I mean? So you're kind of set up, but when you go in on these bar gigs, you got to beat every distraction in the world.
Yeah.
So you conquered the room. You know what I mean? Like you went in there and turned the entire. You got everybody to ignore sports. You got them to ignore gambling. You got them to ignore the big titty waitresses. You know, like you turned the entire room. You got the dude's playing pool, stop playing pool out of respect. And like that kind of shit, like your psyche's like, yeah, buddy, I still got this.
You're right. But you know, then you'll hear this. But then what kind of comedy is that? How does that help you in a theater? That just makes you a really good bar comic.
Well, okay. So what happens if some sort of disruption? Let's say two people sit next to each other in your theater show that don't like one another, and a fight breaks out, and you got to know how to handle that. You know what I mean? Like, you got to count on chaos forever. You know, you're dealing with people, so you're dealing with animals.
Right.
You know, something's gonna happen.
True. True. And I actually, myself and so many comics that started in Texas when I did, we had the comedy workshop, and then we had a couple of bars, and one was actually a strip bar that did a comic, dancer, comic. Yeah, I see the face you're making. Our listeners can't see this, but you're making that, oh my God, I would have hated that. And and yes, if you can win those crowds over, if you could just have somebody quit yelling, show me your titties for 5 minutes,
yeah,
you're done all right.
Yeah, you felt like you knew how to handle a room. You felt like a conductor. You know what I mean? You got a conductor of a children's orchestra. You got a bunch of dummies to quiet down and listen to you and follow directions. You know, like it's a sense of like you conquered them. You know,
mm-hmm. Do you have a go to joke that you like to have on deck ready to go in a bar situation like that? Or you just go up with an attitude that I'm going to win them over?
It depends on the room. If they're not attentive, I'm not really, if half the crowd's attentive, then I'll just go right into the set. And, I just kind of have that mentality that if laughter really is contagious, then if I get the people paying attention, laughing hard enough, then everybody else will start going, well, what am I missing out on? You know, and that's been a lot better for me than being aggressive towards the crowd. I open up in a bar setting like that. I open up with a joke about drawing a dick on my own face because I got too drunk. Because my friends always do it. Now I'm like, fuck it. I'm just going to beat them to the punch. And then right after that, it's a joke about posting a picture of a baby with a wiener drawn on his face. And it's a whole joke about the house rules and passing out with your shoes on and shit like that.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of a drinking joke where I play around with the crowd. And then after that, if that doesn't get them, then I just go straight into crowd work and I'll start picking out people and, you know, just trying to make something happen.
Right. I just did one of those myself in Hong Kong. I went over and did it was actually in Macau, and it was like an Irish pub that had comedy on it with a stage over in the corner. And it really did turn into basically just jacking with the audience for almost an hour. Well, actually, it wasn't an hour. I had, because I was required to do an hour. So it ended up great. It really was one of those, like, I had forgotten, and I was very happy with my own crowd skills because I'm not a big fan of working the crowd.
Oh, okay.
Because I just think it's one of those deals that, you know, let's do our material. We wrote this. We practiced this. You came for a show. But you kind of forget when people come to a bar without a cover charge that has comedy – they're not there for you.
Yep. It's kamikaze comedy. You know what I mean? You're doing comedy in their bar. You know what I mean? They're not doing bar stuff in your comedy show.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's a, I don't, you know, goodness, sorry. I got tongue tied on everything. Yeah. As far as crowd work goes, I know there's a lot of guys, that don't want you doing crowd work before them. And I've never actually had the opportunity to ask somebody about this. You mind if I ask you?
Go ahead.
As a headliner, how do you feel when a feature does crowd work before you?
It depends on whether I know the feature and I know their act. Like if you know their act and you go, they're really good, why didn't you just do your material? Or you can go, man, you just let yourself drop down into crowd work. Or if I know they're a good crowd work comic, I'm okay with that. To me, it doesn't really matter because I've always been at the belief that the headliner is supposed to be the headliner. You're supposed to come on after anything. You're supposed to follow anything. And I kind of think of following a middle as surfing. Like where is the exact crest of this wave? Where am I supposed to stand up on the board and ride what he just put up there?
Yeah, okay. I like the way you look at that because I've worked with headliners, that they talk about, you know, you shouldn't go so hard at the feature and stuff like that. And that kills me because, I come from the automotive industry, right? And everything's about customer satisfaction. It's not about who's the better builder. It's about how can we come together and build the best car possible.
Yeah.
Person happy. And that's how I see a comedy show. you know, the way I see it is if you as a headliner, no, whether you brought, let's say I feature for you, whether you brought me or the club brought me, most of the crowd will think that you take me everywhere.
Right.
That's every single person that I've ever featured for. They ask me that. I get asked that at least once a show. Do you guys work together everywhere?
Yeah. Y'all guys, you know, y'all travel together?
So it looks like an entire product for you. You know what I mean? So the way I've always seen it as is if the person before me, you know, murders, then that's my opportunity to try and level up.
Right.
You know what I mean? I got to try and get a little bit better right there. And that makes it better for the crowd.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I've always wanted to ask somebody that's been in it a lot longer than me how you feel about that.
Well, what do you think when you – what goes through your head when you really feel and you know you have just blown the headliner off the stage?
It's not like, yeah, I shut that motherfucker down. You know what I mean? It's almost a – it is a bit of a sense of accomplishment because it's somebody that's been in it a lot longer than you. But at the same time, you kind of – now you start to worry. You're like, oh, man, does this guy think I'm just trying to bury him? You know what I mean? Does this guy think I'm just trying to outshine him? And that's where that's what goes through my head is I immediately begin to worry. You know, I did Aces in Murrieta, Aces mm-hmm. Comedy. And the gentleman I was featuring for as the host was up there after I'd come down, he comes running over to me and was angry. And he goes, you leave me any laughs out there? And I was like, what? Like, I just came to do what I'm supposed to do, man. It's your job to do better. You know what I mean? Like you're the grand master of this show.
Right.
You know, harder. What comfort level are you in where what I just did makes you worry about your job?
Yeah. You know? I've had guys, middles and even openers that come up to me and go, well, how much time do you do in your headline? I go, well, 45 to an hour 15, typically just, and they go, oh, I've got that much time. I could headline. And I go, okay. You know, there's a big difference between standing on stage I could stand on stage and not open my mouth for 45 minutes. I don't think a lot of people understand there is a big difference between actually being a headliner and just having, I've got 45 minutes. Do you really? Can you switch gears? Is every bit of that 45 minutes on stage going to be good?
Yeah. And is it going to hit? Because you know right away they're going to come out with their hottest material. You know what I mean? Or if they have any sense, they would spread it out. You know what I mean? The strong material between the weak material. But it's you know, headlining. When I first started trying to figure out, when I first started comedy, I was thrown a lot more time than I was ready for. Vegas doesn't have a lot of comics, but they needed people that could do time. And there weren't a lot of funny people in town when I first started. I'm gonna be like on the local scene.
Yeah.
There were a lot of guys that come through at the club that are killers, but on the local scene, just wasn't that strong yet. So I was fortunate that I came out and I had probably 5 to 10 minutes. And when I first started, people started giving me like 20 and 30. And what I started looking at was, okay, I get that it's not the material that makes the headliner. It's a presence. You know what I mean? It's how you relate to the crowd. It's how you build. There's a narrative to almost every headliner that I've ever seen that has been doing it for a long time and is good at it. There's a narrative to their hour. There's a point. Everything ties in. You know, or not, maybe not everything, but there'll be segments where everything ties in.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Just random thoughts of an open micer. It's somebody that has this set plans. They know how to work this crowd in and out. They know the nuances. You know what I mean? They know where facial expressions do more than words because you've done the joke. You've worked it out. You've read the crowds enough, you know, and there's so much more than just material to being a headliner.
Right. And yeah. I think a lot of guys now are so used to, like you said, open mic jokes that the crowds are almost getting into that situation. Like a lot of guys talk like they're reading Twitter. Like,
yes.
That's the way their act comes. They might as well just stand there with their phone and just tell these unconnected jokes, unrelated stories. Mm-hmm. Because I've gone to a couple specialty shows around town here in Denver, and I think y'all will probably have them there now where they just randomly – they're produced by somebody, and they give them a name, and you know, it's not really a comedy club. It's just that – I don't even know what they call them really now. They're just these locally produced theme shows. And so I go check it out, and I see people laughing at stuff, like laughing hard at things that I go, man, I just don't see where you got that laugh from.
Yeah, and it scares you, but at the same, like one of the things I've learned from just my experiences so far is that usually when those kind of laughs are really working, or when those kind of jokes are really working, guys like us that get out and work on jokes, like real jokes that are ours, you're going to do so much better, you know, than that guy, because that crowd is already open to laughing. You know what I mean? It's like, if a dude's killing with stock jokes, you're like, all right, then this is this, you know what I mean? Like, I'm going to steamroll this crowd. But then in the back of your head, you're like, what if they're only going to laugh at stock jokes? You know?
Yeah. So, what if this is what they're trained to eat? You know?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, yeah, I don't know. I guess break them though. You know what I mean? Like that's your chance to show them that that's not how it really is, you know, or that you're different than that.
What are your comedy influences? Who were your guys growing up?
You know, I refer to them as like the Yankees, the Yankees of the comedy scene. Everybody's favorite baseball players were Babe Ruth, you know, stuff like that. So I got the typical ones. My dad let me listen to Kinison and Pryor when I was growing up. Believe it or not, I've been listening to you for a long time. So this is pretty awesome getting to sit down and talk with you. I lived in Texas for 10 years. So your name pops all the time. I hear you on all the drive time radio shows and stuff. So stuff like that. And then my dad, I will say that my dad, I grew up in a mechanic shop talking, you know, just talking trash.
Right.
And my dad is one of those guys that he is relentless. I have seen him make guys slam down flashlights because he wouldn't quit busting their balls. I've seen guys push their toolbox to the grocery store across the street because they quit because they couldn't take his mess. Yeah. So he's just, he is a, am I able to cuss on here? I don't know.
Yeah.
So he's one of the best shit talkers I've ever met. So he's one of those guys that I had to learn how to talk shit out of self-defense, or else I was just going to cry every day in my room. So yeah, there's a lot of guys like that. And then I've loved people like Jim Norton. He's one of my favorite because he is very open about all of his shortcomings. Jim Norton is very open. Like, you know, he's messed around with a lot of trannies and he's like, yeah, well, that's me. Here I am.
That's one of the things that I always, when I first started listening to Jim Norton years ago, I'm like, is this guy seriously a freak? I mean, is he just making this up, or does he really have these weird sexual perversions? And I don't know, that may not even be the right word. It was just like these stories that he would tell about, oh my God, if I ever even thought about that, I would burn myself in hell.
Yeah, but I mean, at the same time, that's why you listen to him. It's the stuff that either you don't ever want to, or you want to and are afraid to experience. He does it. You know, so you just listen in, and then he's candid about it, and he's funny when he talks about it. So I really like his style. And, of course, Bill Burr, I like that man's style because he's not afraid to make a crowd uncomfortable with his opinion.
Right.
I get tired of – I hate when, you know, you say something that the crowd reacts to negatively, and most comics, you'll watch them crawfish right away. They go right back. I'm sorry, I didn't mean it. I mean, come on, guys, just a joke.
You know? Not me. I actually have times and we'll look right at him and go, oh, what's that supposed to do? Maybe change my fucking opinion?
Yeah,
oh,
there you go.
Like, no, this is, I said it, I mean it. I had that conversation once when I was on the radio here in Denver. Like, they wanted me to come in and apologize to this woman that was offended by something I said. And I'm like, no, I said it, I meant it. My apology would be fake. I actually meant this. If she doesn't like it, don't listen to the show.
There you go.
Because I do think too many people back down from what they really believe. I think that's one of the things that has happened in business and HR, that so many people just are afraid to be honest at work. They're afraid they're going to offend somebody. What's HR going to do? I think if you really – if you did a survey – and I think this is a lot in real life. If people just say what they think you want to hear, if you're doing a survey and you go, what do you believe – okay, is this what you want to hear? Then that I believe that. But as soon as they're gone, like, I would never vote for that. Do you see what I'm saying? It's that I think people are just lying just to be politically correct these days.
Or they're avoiding confrontation for some reason.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Taking the easy way out. You blame all that on the lawyers. It's all litigation. It's people feel slighted, and instead of, let me figure out how to rectify the situation, they just say, fuck it, let me sue, and forever off that, you know, $60,000 that I'm going to make on this lawsuit.
Yeah, like one of the things I just posted on Facebook this morning was somebody sent me a link from Psychology Today about why there's no ADHD in France. They don't have it like we do here. They don't medicate the children. And there was a whole article, and I read it, and it's a discipline issue over there. that they raise their kids completely different. They don't allow them to make choices. This is what you're eating. I told you you could watch this. Their rules and boundaries are much different than we have here.
Yeah.
And I think that I've said that for years. I used to say ADD was the absence of dad's discipline. And it was kind of fun for me to read this article by a clinical psychologist saying America has a problem.
Yeah. What happened was is we had generations of people that were raised by hard asses. You know, I'm sure you were raised by one. I was raised by one.
I was definitely raised by one.
Work ethic was beat into you. It wasn't taught. It was, you're not going to work. I'm going to punish you. You're going to get beat. I'm going to take away all your shit. You know what I mean? Work is everything. That's how you earn. I think it's we're constantly looking for middle ground, but we're a nation of extremists. You know, like you're taught that you can't be middle ground by politicians. You know what I mean? You're either right or left. And if you're in the middle, well, you're just an idiot.
Yeah, you know? Pick a side, dumbass.
Yeah, there you go. You always got to pick a side. So what these people do is they go, I don't like the way my parents raised me. They were too hard on me. I'm going to be super soft. So when you're super soft, your kids have no fear of you. Of course they have ADHD. They don't have to pay attention to you. They don't have to pay attention to anything. You know, so I agree with you.
Well, I think a lot of it, and I've seen it in friends and other people who, and it's even wrong to say it in America in this day and age, is the problem of broken homes, so many split up homes. And you may have experienced this too, where your girlfriend, did she ever say to you, don't talk to my kid like that? Don't talk to, and you're kind of like, well, if we're a family, I have to treat it all as a family.
Yeah. We've struggled a little bit with it. Oh, excuse me. Grab my charger.
That's okay.
We've struggled a little bit with it because, you know, when it first started, I'm very Southern about manners and things like that. So she doesn't want her kids saying ma'am and sir to her because she doesn't want to feel like a dictator. And I'm like, well, that just teaches respect. It's not a dictator thing. You know, if you got them calling you admiral, then that's dictator.
That's a big difference. I still say yes, ma'am, and no, ma'am to everybody. I mean, even people that are younger than me. If I go to Starbucks, you know, did you want sugar-free? Yes, ma'am. Like, I was just raised that way. It is respect for a position.
Yep. Exactly. That's all it is. So we have had that issue a little bit. I don't yell at the kids. I'll get stern, but I don't yell. My dad yelled. My dad was a hothead. So I never wanted to talk to him about anything. You know what I mean? And I was always afraid of, well, you know, now I got, which that was a good thing. It kept me out of a lot of trouble being terrified of him.
I think that's supposed to be it. That is really supposed to be the fear of your parents is, it's like learning the respect for fire. It's going to burn you. Those are your parents. They fear them, fear and respect them.
Yeah. And, you know, it's all about finding the right way to do it. Like, I don't want them, like, I have issues where when people try to hug me, I'll still flinch. Because my parents were very just right away to the rod, you know what I mean? They just smacked you and then explained why. So I still kind of like flinched when that happened.
Doesn't make you a bad person.
It did not at all, but it also, it's hard to get affection, you know, when you're ducking hugs all the time. So it made me look at it. I was like, all right, I got to find a middle ground on that. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want the kids being afraid of me by any means, but I do want them respecting me. So what I am is I'm just stern and I stand my ground.
Yeah.
So like, you know, I've been getting on, like, her boy doesn't want to wear socks to school, so his shoes stink. So he keeps lying about it, and I want to beat him so bad. But he's, number one, he's not my kid. Number two, I'm like, I don't want him to be terrified of me. Like, that sets a bad precedence, right? Like, if I beat him for not having socks on, then what does he think is going to happen when he gets an F at school? He's like, well, that's murder. You know,
exactly. And that's sort of like what you just sort of reinforced the point that I was saying earlier of saying, OK, I don't want to do this because he's not my kid. So now he's free to make these other choices that aren't good choices. And I think that we have so many of those kind of homes in America now that kids are just raised almost like Lord of the Flies. It's kind of like, I'm going to do what I want to do.
Well, what I do instead of beating him, what I do is I've been making him do push-ups. So it was like, if you want to lie to me, then you're just going to do push-ups. And the more you lie, the more push-ups you're going to do. And if the push-ups ain't cutting it, we're going to go to the park over here and you're going to run this 2-mile track until you puke.
So you're making him so big and strong, he's just going to kick your ass after he lies to you.
Damn it. Nah, I didn't think about that. But yeah, that's what it is. But no, I'll put him to work in the yard. Hey, you know what I mean? If you're going to, if that's the attitude you're going to have, you're going to pick up dog shit at 7 o'clock in the morning. Then you're going to pull weeds. Then you're going to pick up the neighbor's garbage. Like, it's just, it's one of those things that I'm going to be like, I can't hit you for this. You know what I mean? Like if he mouths off to his mom or something, I'll pop him. You know what I mean? Like, you're going to respect your mom, boy. Like, that's one of the, she cooks for you and she squirted you out of her vagina. You got 18 years at least of respecting her. And then after that, you'd be whatever kind of mongrel you want to be.
You're on your own after that. Yeah.
Yep. Feed yourself. You can talk to whoever you want to, however you want to.
Well, there's another thing that you hear for kids in this day and age, and I'm glad to hear you say it, is you will go pick up dog shit, or you will go cut the grass, or you will rake the leaves. These are chores that a family person does. This is a family. Everybody works together. And I hear so many people go, well, you know, they're only kids for so long. You know, let them be children. Don't make them, you know, life is going to have them working for the rest of their life. But isn't that what part of parenting is preparing your child for adulthood?
You're giving them all the necessary skills, and also to relegate the only fun you'll have in life to the first 18 years of it is total horseshit. That's another thing where I think we're teaching kids the wrong thing, because as soon as you're told you're 18, you're like, hey, you're an adult now. Get the fuck out. You know, like, but the whole – all the way up until then, we love you so much. I'm going to do your laundry every day.
Yeah, here's a car.
Yeah. Not only do you not know how to do laundry, but you don't know how to do taxes. You don't know how to grocery shop, and you don't know how to fend for yourself. Good luck.
And that's why we turn to the government so much now. Don't you see so many people now like, well, I need higher this. I need the government to take care of that. Minimum wage should be higher. You know what? Minimum wage is minimum. That's the word.
Well, the only time I've ever argued with the thought of the minimum wage thing is if it's the wage gap that I don't like. You know what I mean? I don't like that billionaires are basically like the people of Walmart, right? The people that own Walmart. They were handing out literature on how to survive on minimum wage and welfare.
That's wrong.
So they were promoting, hey, look, we're totally fine with you being, you know, at poverty level. Here's how to survive. When I guarantee you the Waltons aren't shitting on anything less than 24 karat gold.
Exactly.
You know what I
mean? Wiping their ass with linen.
Yeah, there you go. So that's my disparity with it. You know what I mean? Is the wage gap. I'm okay with people making $15 an hour. But those people making $15 an hour also have to realize they are now able to come under $15 an hour worth of scrutiny. You know what I mean? Like there's a price attached to that. The more money you make, the more shit you're going to deal with from customers, and the more likely you are to be replaced by robots. Which I think we should all jobs should go to robots. We need to go back to farming and traveling and having fun and killing shit. You know what I mean? And living off the land. So I don't. That's just how I feel about that. Let robots do all the work. Let's go. This is how your adulthood should go. You turn 18 and you should make enough money to buy a robot to replace you at work. And then that robot, and then you go enjoy life. That's how I think it should work.
I kind of like that.
Right? Everything gets done.
Well, you know, as you travel around the world, and I didn't see it till a few years ago when I started working for cruises and going to other countries, not just traveling Americas, because I used to think traveling America, you got to see enough and it expanded your horizon. But basically, America is the same everywhere you go. But when you go to another country and you see how simple they live and how happy they are, you know, go to Italy and you see this little tiny apartment where it's got a bed and a tiny kitchen, and they're laughing their ass off, and they drink coffee all day long at a little espresso shop. You don't need everything that Americans have. And I think that depresses us even more, is we think we're supposed to have bigger, better, faster. Why don't I have the latest iPad? Why, instead of just going, you know what? I'm pretty healthy. I think I'm going to go fishing today.
There you go. I'm going to go hiking. You live in Colorado, man. There is so much to go hike and see and get out and do. You know what I mean? And just in your own, like even here, I live in Vegas. There you can go to Red Rock. You can go to Mount Charleston. There's so many mountains to go see. It's like, why would you relegate yourself to sitting in the house playing on an iPad all day? You know, like I love playing video games, but the only time I play video games are the times that I can't be outside doing anything. Maybe it's raining.
Uh-huh.
Maybe it's 6 o'clock in the morning and I can't be working on tools in the garage. That's when I play video games.
Right. You know now, this takes us back full circle to what we were talking about earlier. Oh, look, they're 2 years old, and look how they're working the iPad. That's all they know. That's all they've raised by gadgets. They're not they're not being forced to go outside and play in the leaves. You know, they're not going outside. And look, it rained. The ditches are full. Go swimming in your underwear.
My girlfriend's oldest daughter is 12, and she is drop-dead gorgeous, okay? My girlfriend is terrified to let her go to – we have a park that is a quarter mile away from us.
Mm-hmm.
She is terrified to let her walk to the park with her friends. And I'm like, look, you can't – she's 12. Like, you can't coddle her forever. She's got to learn what dangers are. She's got to learn how to get herself in and out of trouble. You know what I mean? She's got to learn how to be a person. Like you said, you're setting them up for becoming an adult. You know what I mean? You can't just – you can't protect them all the time. You got to teach them how to protect themselves. You know, like she's got an iPhone and she carries her books. She refuses to carry a book bag. So she carries her books like she's in some fucking, you know, teeny bopper movie. That's how teenage girls do it. But she carries that iPhone right on top of her books. And I keep telling her, I'm like, you're making yourself a target. That's exactly what you're doing.
Yeah.
Somebody went up, they'll snatch that iPhone. And you got to figure out whether you need to save your books or save your iPhone.
Right. Now let's discuss the iPhone. This is something I've talked to a few guys about, and I don't think a lot of – are you getting a buzz?
That's a street sweeper. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I didn't know if it was my phone kicking in. Is that you said she's 12 and she has an iPhone. To me, that's absolutely wrong. That's been one of those things that I've argued with people. You know, like really old people get that jitterbug phone with the all it does is dial a number or call 911. That's what kids need. That's all they need. Because every parent goes, oh, I need to know how they are, where they are, how they are, or how can I get in contact with them. And I think when a lot of parents give a kid these new iPhones or smartphones, they're going, welcome to the adult world. You've just given them access to everything bad in the world. Like, why are kids sexting each other? Because you gave them a phone with a camera on it. Why are they looking up bad stuff on the internet? Because you gave them an internet access phone. So, do you see what I'm saying? I don't think people are taking real consideration about what they're doing just because, well, all the other kids have one.
Well, you know, also part of it, I mean, I'm sure you found a couple of your dad's Playboys.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was there, and that was part of being an adult.
You had to go looking for it.
Yeah, you had to go looking for it. And that's kind of the same way the internet is. You got to know where to look for it. But once you learn about Google and you're like, well, I want to know about sex, and you put in sex and it hit images, and you got way more than the Playboy we ever saw.
Yeah.
You know?
Or the website access that they have, you know, like that. You're opening it up to pure predators a lot of times like that.
Yep, and that's the conversation we have with her a lot. And I'm 100% against her having an iPhone. She wants the new iPhone 6, and I got her talked out of it because I started taking her to the skate park. I got her into going to, like, riding skateboards and stuff. So now she wants to spend all of her money on that. She's totally okay with having the whatever iPhone she's got, but she found a hobby that took her attention away from that phone. You know what I mean?
Right.
But I threaten to take it away from her all the time. She smarted off to me one day, and I was like, next time you do that shit, I'm going to throw that fucking iPhone in the toilet, and I'll flush it until it goes, and I won't care. It's just, you know, you can – a flip phone does everything you need it to do, you know. So I very much agree with you that, you know, I mean, we had – you and I had to earn our cell phones, you know what I mean? Like, cell phones came out, and you were like, look at all them rich folks with their cell phones.
Yeah, there must be a doctor.
Yeah, right? Right. And then, you know, we had to save up and get that. And that was a big deal. And now they're just like, well, there's one of my girlfriend's friends has an 8-year-old with an iPhone. And the dude, he interrupts everybody when they're talking. We had a cookout a couple of weeks ago. We had a bunch of comedians over, and that little boy came over with his mom. And I have never seen so many comedians team up to roast an 8-year-old in my life. But he came over being a shithead, and everybody just, all right, dude, you don't want to be, you know, a big boy about it. Well, we're going to toughen you up. And man, they just started laying into him. And so funny, but he just kept looking at his phone the whole time. Everybody was making fun of him. He didn't know anybody was even going off on him.
Well, so how sad is that? That he wasn't even aware of the world around him.
Yeah. Or look at fights. Every time a fight breaks out, no one helps. Everyone records because they want a damn viral video.
Mm-hmm. Save the kid.
Oh, I don't know if you've seen this yet, but as soon as I saw it, I swear, I go, Mudflap's going to love this one. Have you seen where the substitute teacher broke up a fight with his belt?
I did. I loved that.
I knew you would. Oh, man. That's, you know, and there were parents that on that newscast that were like, well, I think he really overstepped his boundaries. He shouldn't have done that. Like, what if that was your kid in there and your kid took a wild elbow to the nose because this fight just went on because the security guards couldn't get there in time?
Yeah.
Now your kid's got a broken nose because the teacher just sat there and did nothing. You'd be mad about the teacher doing nothing. You know, it's a, I don't know.
Well, I hate hearing people that go, if anybody ever laid a hand on my kid, if anybody ever touched my kid like that. Yeah. I hate hearing that. Unless they're doing something sexual, probably all they're doing is stopping trouble. Because mm-hmm. that's all. Anytime a neighbor laid a hand on me, it was because I was caught doing something wrong.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. And that's, you know, it was never like the times that any of the neighbors or family members had to pop me for doing anything. It was never, well, let me go find them and kick their ass. It was, well, what'd you do?
Yeah.
You know, they had to find out if it was worth it. Did I earn it? I earn that smile?
I used to get the double ass kickings, and I'm sure you did too, where you got sometimes it might even be triple now that I'm thinking about it in my head, because you get in a fight at school, you get your ass kicked at school, so then you have to go to the principal, and you get at that time got a paddling for fighting at school, and then you got home, and your dad found out you got in a fight and lost, now you got an ass kicking.
Yep.
So that was a full day of ass kickings.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's how I learned how to fight. I was 6 years old. I actually have a joke about this. I talk about toughening kids up, right? A street sweeper's coming by one more time.
I hear it in the background. Yeah. How do you live with that?
Right? It's horrible. I'm going to go complain. If anybody ever sweeps my streets that loud.
What is this, Russia?
Right. But I have a joke about how, you know, the Boy Scouts wouldn't allow in gay males for so long.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, that's weird considering that they call young Boy Scouts weeblos, you know.
And yeah.
I play off of that word. And then I did that joke one time and a lady got mad at me. And she asked me, she goes, well, you know, what if your son was gay? I said, teach that little faggot how to fight. And that's one of those that it always divides the crowd. But that's where I start working from. I had to learn how to fight because of a bad haircut. My dad thought when I was 6 years old, he thought it would be awesome to give me a haircut that was spiked on the top with a perm in the back.
Uh-huh.
I got my ass kicked on the regular. And my dad, he knew it was happening. And then one day he saw it happen. He saw one of the kids at the bus stop flatten out my hair. And he opened the sliding door on the apartment we lived in and yelled for me to come back. At the time, he called me Bubba. That's how redneck I am.
Bubba?
My dad called me. He screamed out, Bubba. Like, I'm already getting bullied because of my haircut. Now he's going to scream out, Bubba, thank you. So he calls me back to the apartment and tells me straight up. He goes, dude, the next time I see somebody bully you, if you don't stand up for yourself, I'm going to kick your ass, too. I went right back down to that bus stop, and the first kid that hit me on top of the head, dude, I turned and just started swinging. And that ever since – if I get into a fight as an adult, I'm afraid to lose it because I don't want my dad coming after me.
Oh, I know. One of the fights that I had as a kid, I've always been, well, let's back up a little bit. My dad had a farm. We raised Charolais cattle and stuff. So I've always had the redneck side. I mean, that's the way I grew up. I grew up baling hay and helping birth cows and, you know, calves. But it wasn't me. It was almost like I was born in the wrong spot. You know, I was into reading and writing poetry and music and bands. And, you know, it's like, I don't belong here. I'm going to go to the big city one day. But you still grew up this way. You know, you still had to live with those people. I still had to hang around cowboys that wanted to kick my ass because I had John Lennon glasses. You know what I mean? So one day at school, I got in a fight with a guy that didn't like my glasses. When I went home and I told my parents about it, my dad made my brother take me down the street and fight the guy. My brother went down with me and with one of his friends, and I called the guy out of his house. And his friends came out, and my brother's friends were like, nobody gets involved or you get your ass kicked. These two are going to fight it out. And I whooped the guy's ass because it was at that point I knew I had to. I knew I just have to. My name will be Mud. It'll go around school. And I don't think – and even more, the guy and I became friends after that. He respected me for kicking his ass. So there's not, that's not happening in this day and age anymore.
No. Dude, I lost fights where the dude would sit and talk to me afterwards, and he's like, I got respect for you just because you didn't back down. And after that, nobody could mess with me in school because, you know, whatever bully I had the nuts to stand up to had my back.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that was one of those things where you learn that, you know, fighting ain't always worth it, but sometimes, you know, standing up for yourself is.
Right.
You know, and it'll earn you, I hate to say street cred, but it gives you the credit you need to where people don't mess with you anymore. You know, there's purpose to it. I don't necessarily encourage it, but if it's going to happen, be ready, you know?
Well, that street cred is one of those weird, you're a bad boy street cred. It's, you know, I've never understood that. I was telling my son this years ago, of like, when did ignorance become cool?
Yeah.
That's what I don't understand. It became cooler to be ignorant and talk stupid and act stupid and wear your clothes wrong. And just, when did that become okay? I've never understood that point. I'd rather be educated, have a good job, have a good vocabulary. You know what I mean? I don't understand where that came in. It's like, that's just the coolest shit when dog.
Well, I think a lot of it is it's product placement is really what it comes down to. Like you were talking about earlier, America is a very, I got to have stuff, you know, I got to have the coolest things nation. You know what I mean? We've always got to be on top of the trends. Everybody's got to have the coolest clothes, the newest phone, the hottest technology, whatever. So I think that's where street cred and all that stuff has been made marketable,
mm-hmm.
and able to be sold to people. And once they did that, then that's where the narrative started to back it up to drive the sales. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
A little too conspiracy theory?
No, I'm all about conspiracy theories. I really believe a lot of them are based in some type of truth. They're based in something. And one of the things my girlfriend and I had a chat the other day about is the new country music. And I know the people that listen to this podcast know that I actually hate the new country music. I refuse to listen to it.
What year do you think? Because I have my own year. I think I know what two songs finally killed country music.
Uh-huh.
And I want to see what your opinion is on that. What year or what songs do you think country music was finally like, nope, we're new. This is a whole new country now.
Oh, I would have to say around 2010, 9 or 10, with Jason Aldean. I think it took that long for me to go, it's dead, it's over.
I felt like it was like where – well, maybe this is just where it started for me, but like Achy Breaky Heart, Boots Scootin' Boogie, like the pop country.
Yeah. No, I'll go with you on that. That opened the door. But as far as when I say it, you know, felt like, okay, it's done, it's over. I'm not hearing a steel guitar. I'm not hearing a violin. No, you know, it's no longer the white man's blues, because that's what country was.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, I'm okay with the sound changing, but it's turned into like, okay, I do love me some hip hop and rap. I love ignorant rap. I love the type of rap that's socially conscious. You know what I mean? Like I like both of it. I like all music for different traits. I love punk music, you know what I mean? Because at least like guys in punk rock they made music just to make noise. They
didn't
make
music. I love punk rock myself. I was a big Sex Pistols fan and the Clash and that kind of stuff.
Very cool. So I like all that stuff, you know what I mean? Oh goodness, I got off track. Oh, so look at the way hip hop's become. It's become all about selling now. All of hip hop is what clothes am I wearing, what car am I driving, what booze am I drinking. Look at country music. It's all about what brand of pants am I wearing? What truck am I driving? What am I drinking? You know what I mean? It's all become product placement.
Right.
It's all just a way to sell stuff. Whereas country music, like I'm saying, I'm okay with the sound changing. You know what I mean? Like rock music's changed and there's still rock bands that are new that I'll listen to because lyrically they still make a point. You know what I mean? They're not just, you know, trying to be famous. So that's what I look for is content.
Well, here's my argument with this, and I hope I don't drive off too many listeners with this, is that there's genres of music. Like blues is blues, rock is rock. Hip-hop is different than rap, even though it's kind of those are two different variations. It's kind of like country music is a genre. It should have been country music. Now, if you want to call it something else, I'm okay with that. But don't kill the genre because you think that's what, you know, when somebody goes, "Oh, I love the new Florida Georgia Line," and you go, "That's not country. The beat of the music's not country. The sound is not country. Just call it something else, and I'll be okay with that."
Yeah. Okay. All
Does right. that make sense to you?
Yeah. No. Totally. I totally agree with you on that. That's you know,
like you yeah. couldn't hear Florida Georgia Line and go, "Oh, that's blues." You know, there's certain sounds and the way the music is played and written that make it a genre of music.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you. And I don't, but you know, again, it's all about people just wanting to sell records. You know what I mean? They're playing to the broadest audience instead of like, you know, I mean, look at somebody like Johnny Cash. He was okay with being the outlaw,
mm-hmm.
you know, and he was okay with being the guy that didn't have the cleanest of records, that didn't live the best of life. You know what I mean? Like he was okay with being him, you know, all those guys, all the classic country guys, they all had their own look, their own sounds as far as their voice went, you know, their guitar players had their own style. So that was different. Now it's just, everything is
marketing. Does it have the
right, yeah. Yeah. Does it have the right beats per minute so that people will buy it?
Right. Right. Well, I read a thing the other day that for the first time, I've been complaining about this for years, but the other day I saw something that totally made sense. Was about being country hard. That's the way somebody described it, as being country hard. And well, to me, country hard used to be like Johnny Cash and prison songs and living hard, and that was country hard and working hard, and you lost your dog hard. Now yeah. there's this whole thing about I'm country hard. You know, I'm a badass country boy. I will take you down. My street cred is as bad. And as I read this and I went, oh, what bullshit. What horse shit. Who's teaching country guys that you're like, what is there going to be tractor by shootings?
Yeah. And all, you know, classic country was all about love for women. You know what I mean? That's where a majority of the sad country songs came from, was that there was a lost love or couldn't catch it or whatever.
Yeah, you know? Got like, away from you. The one you'll never have again. The one you screwed up on.
It was about not being a badass. That was the point, is that you had – not the point maybe, but that was one of the great things about it, is you had an outlaw that was letting down his guard to talk about his love. You know what
yeah,
I mean? Yeah,
like Merle Haggard, I turned 21 in prison. Mama tried, you know?
Yeah.
To me, that's country hard right there.
Yeah. Hell yeah. And that's – yeah, I don't know. That's – how weird is that, right? Like – hip hop guys are getting tougher when they started out pretty soft. But now like country guys started out tough and now they're getting soft. Like it's the complete flip, you know, like that whole I'm tough attitude without being able to back it up too.
Maybe you're right on track that, because I see that and that bugs me. It's one of the new things I've been doing in my act about how country isn't country. And, you know, like whiskey was whiskey. John, you know, John Wayne drank Jim Beam and Jack Daniels, and you know, it wasn't Fireball. My whiskey didn't have to taste like candy. Whiskey's supposed to make you think you just swallowed an asshole, you know, and then you go, that's smooth, and you're drinking, you know, Fireball. It's like John Wayne would kick you in the cunt.
Yeah, whiskey's supposed to make you forget that the woman you just kissed has a 5 o'clock shadow.
Exactly.
Bad the taste is supposed to be.
Right.
You know? So, yeah, I never have been one for all the fancy foo-foo drinks. Like I still drink whiskey straight up when I drink, you know? It just doesn't, like it's, you see cowboys in $100 shirts that are starched and pressed that are just, that's their everyday garb. That's not what they're going to church or court in. You know what I mean? Like that's just, they're way too clean all the time. And there's no dirt under their fingernails. The truck doesn't have any dents or scratches. There's no work done to it. You know, I don't know. I just don't like it.
I don't want to see it. I want to see a little bit of cow poop on your boot, just a little bit. You might have wiped them off because you're going out, but they got to look like they've been out in the field.
I think that's the thing. The whole fake thing. Now that I think about it even deeper, I think that's what drives me crazy about a lot of the tough guys in hip hop, is that they're not real tough guys. You know what I mean? Like, it's fake. I don't trust it. Just like the cowboys, when you see a lot of these guys come in dressing country, and then they're bankers or some shit. You know what I mean? They don't, and they live in an apartment, you know, and they're driving a Corolla.
Yeah.
Like, who are you? You know who you are.
But aren't you seeing this now, though? They're not even dressing country. It used to be, just even a few years ago, you did put on the hat and the starched shirt and the pressed Wranglers, And now it's sort of like the cowboys want to look like they all dress from the buckle. You know, they're not really even going for the Western look. They're going for the, this is what we wear now because we're country hard.
Oh, my God. Do bar fights even happen anymore? Like, are they?
I don't know. I don't hear about them much anymore. I haven't been going to the country bar here lately. But yeah, they used to be one or two at closing, just right at closing time. And they were usually because a real cowboy got in a fight with a country hard cowboy.
There you go. Are you familiar with Houston? Did you live in Houston at all?
Yeah. I used to go to Gilly's and stuff when I grew up down there.
Okay. Did you ever know of a bar called Night Moves, 1960 and 45?
I've heard of it, but I did not go there.
Okay. I lived in Houston for about 6 years. And I'm sorry, 4 years. I was a head bouncer at Night Moves, and check this out. It had three bars in one. It was at 1960, which is the Spring area.
Uh-huh. You know, it's just, yeah. I used to live in Conroe, so I know that whole upper area.
Okay, so you know Greens Point's called Guns Point.
Right. And I did not know that till just last week. Because Greens Point Mall used to be like one of the better malls in town. And I've been gone for years. But I was driving somebody to the airport, and we were going by, and they go, oh, Guns Point Mall. I go, what? Oh, yeah, this has gone bad. It's really bad out here now.
It's rough, man. So I was a head bouncer at a bar that had three bars in one. It was a country bar on one side, which was all rednecks. And then on the other side, they came through the same entry door. And on the other side, it's a hip-hop bar, all black folks. And in the middle, there's a karaoke bar. And they're all connected. One price gets you into all of them. And I have seen some of the most interesting brawls. I saw an Asian dude dressed as a redneck that took, you know how like in Texas, when you get a beer, they'll do the little handkerchief out of the napkin.
Uh-huh.
Put it on the beer. Well, he took it and flipped it over and burned two holes in it. So it looked like a Klan mask.
Oh
yeah. And then walked over to the hip hop side, walked around the whole thing and had black dudes high fiving him, telling him it was hilarious. I was like, if a white dude would have done that, that'd have been the end of the night for him.
Yeah, but because he was an Asian, he might know karate.
Yeah,
you got to be.
that bar was very interesting to work in. All the black dudes that lost fights always lost them to women. I saw so many women kick the shit out of dudes in there. It was just funny. But I've seen some big ass rednecks get into throwdowns, man. Just, you know, just two massive dudes just beating. Like when a dude named Hoss and a dude named Tank are fighting it out.
You just back up and watch.
You just let – we'll replace whatever furniture they break because we can't replace doormen that easy. You know? So, but yeah, I don't think you even see stuff like that anymore, you know?
Yeah, is that more of our – that we've lost that masculine side of I need to fight or fuck? Because I used to think that was it at the closing time. Bars close, those are the two things that the testosterone and alcohol say.
Yep.
Because you don't see those early in the evening, but right when the bar starts to close, isn't that when it gets like, well, I haven't found anybody, I'm gonna fight somebody.
That my motto, I used to do the old drink, fuck, or fight. We're doing two out of three tonight.
Uh-huh.
And we're already drinking. So you know that, yeah, totally. I mean, if you're hitting on a girl, you better be out by last call. Because after that, everybody, you know, everybody's antsy. They're ready to go. So, yeah, parking lot fights when they knew security wasn't around. That's when there'd be some good throwdowns. I've seen one dude tried to fight me one time, so I kicked him out of the club, and he was sitting on top of his car waiting for me at the end of the night. So I'm herding people out of there, and when he sees me, he throws his hands up. What's up, motherfucker? But he's still drunk and falls off of his car. So I won that one. All right, see you later.
So there was not even any fight after that? He just fell off and was done?
Nope, that was it. He was out in the parking lot. So what I was always told by the off-duty deputies that were there is as long as I'm on the sidewalk, they can save me. But once I go out there, they got to call cops that are on duty.
Right, and you're not supposed to fight unless it's inside. As a door guy, your rule was inside the building, right?
You're really not supposed to fight at all. You're more of a people mover. When people start to fight, you know, you assess the fight. The way I always did it is if I saw a doorman pulling a guy one way, I grabbed the other guy and went the other way just automatically. And I would just carry him right outside. There were a few that tried to wrestle with me.
But aren't you supposed to bang their head into a pole just to kind of calm them down a little bit?
If they gave me trouble on the way out or tried to fight with me when I'm splitting them up, took a swing at me, I never got hit. People took swings, but they're drunk. So you see it coming from a mile away. You know, you're on high alert because you're waiting on their to tackle you or some shit. They would try and take a swing. You know, I'd either duck it or fucking just hug them so they couldn't hit me. And then I'd carry them out. And on the way out, I would get their arms behind their back and I'd make sure to open the door with their face. That was my favorite thing to do. You want to try and kick the shit out of me legally? Uh-huh. I can't do it. So I'm just going to open the door with your face.
Oops.
And then, and then once we'd get out there, when I'd do that, I'd push them. I'd like, all right, just go, just get out. And they would turn around to try and bow up. Well, what they wouldn't see is the off-duty deputy standing right there against the door that wasn't opening.
Mm-hmm.
So they would turn around to try and fight me. Those guys are just waving at them. So, I felt 10 feet tall in that place.
As Travis Tritt used to say, 10 foot tall and bulletproof.
Hell yeah. So,
well, we're coming toward the end here, and I want to ask you about tonight is the end of Letterman. Tonight is the final Letterman program. Wednesday the 20th, I believe, but I know it's tonight. What is your take on Letterman? Were you a Letterman fan? Are you glad it's over? Or who was better in your eyes?
I started out liking Leno more. I didn't really get Letterman at first as a young guy. And then the older I got and the more I got into stand-up, the more I started to appreciate Letterman. The dude's put a lot of comics on.
Mm-hmm. A lot more than Leno.
Yes, a whole lot more than Leno. And the way that I started to look at Letterman was that he was kind of like the closest thing I would have at a shot to a Johnny Carson type situation. You know what I mean? As a comic, going on Carson was a huge deal. You know, when Carson was around. Right. Same thing with Letterman. I was making on Letterman. You know, there's guys bragging about being on Letterman 28, 29 times right now because it's coming to an end. And that, to me, that's amazing. You know, that there's guys that are still able to do stand up on the late show format. Just because I, you know, that's one of those things that I watched as a kid. And it was always super just awesome to see a comic do well and get brought over to the chair by somebody that's been in it for very, very long.
Yeah. But those days of the late night shows making us stars ended a long time ago. Because like you said, these guys have been on 28 times. You're like, and who? And where do they do it? Because the old days, and I think one of the last of the ones was Roseanne Barr, where they actually went on and became an immediate star. Like she went on and people went, you need a sitcom, boom, you're a star.
Yeah.
And I think once we got, that was the days of three channels, when most of America watched those shows. But now you're going to watch Letterman, Conan, Fallon. It's spread out. Audiences are so spread out. You're like, oh, yeah, I think I saw that guy. I think I know who that is.
Yeah, you know, I agree with you. It has been watered down because of all the choices you have. But I kind of look at it like this, too. You know, like Babe Ruth hit a lot of home runs in the old Yankees field, and I wouldn't mind taking a swing at that, too. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Like,
I get you. You know what I mean? You know, a lot of people have already passed through there. And in the grand scheme of things, you're like, come on, man, there's guys that have done it 30 times. What importance is it really? You know what I mean? But at the same time, it's one of those things where maybe not even for the resume, of course it does great. But for the personal achievement, you're like, I saw that place as a kid and I worked all the way to that place as an adult.
Yeah.
You know, I'm kind of disappointed about that. But at the same time, you know, not good riddance, but thank you for stepping down and allowing other people to give it a shot now.
Yeah. Yeah. I love Letterman. He's always been my favorite overall. Cause I'm a big fan of sarcasm. He's so, you know, dry humor. I love it when you can just say something under your breath and it's genuinely funny.
Yeah.
And I don't think a lot of people get that. And Letterman, when he was early, when he's first starting, was bizarre. I mean, the guy would come up out of from under the stairs and the giving away canned hams all show long. Just bizarre stuff. And I think over the past few years, it turned into a very predictable show, as we all know. Here's the monologue. Here's top 10. Here's the guest going to close with a band. And that became it. Where earlier, you didn't know what was going to happen on this show.
Okay. Yeah. I guess I never saw that side of him.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, you know, and it always goes back to is that the people making the product or the people consuming the product that want it to be that way?
Ah, good point.
I always struggle with that because it like a I'm working on losing weight. So I've stopped eating sugar, you know, a lot of stuff like that. And then you realize how much stuff has sugar in it. I try to, who's the blame on? Is it the people that are making the colorful packaging, or is it us for falling for it?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? What started this whole thing in motion, and who's to blame? And how do we beat it? So
yeah, it's kind of like Craig Ferguson. I really enjoyed Craig Ferguson's show because a fake sidekick, a robot fake sidekick, a horse that wasn't real was another one of your go-to things, and yet he always sounded like he just came out and started talking. It never felt like, these are the jokes I've written today that I must say in my monologue.
Yeah.
Were you a fan of Craig's late night show?
No, and it's for the most horrible reasoning ever. I liked him on the Drew Carey show when he played the boss on the show.
Uh-huh.
And when he made the transition, I was like, I kind of like this other guy more, so I never even gave him a shot.
Oh, how sad.
I should go, because I don't watch much TV at that point anyway. I have a hard time sitting still. I just, like my dad, that whole work ethic thing.
Mm-hmm.
He's like,
I could be doing something. I could be doing something.
Yep, that's exactly.
I could be making furniture out of pallets.
Yeah. So that's always been my hard time with TV. So even then, I don't sit down and watch a whole lot of it, which is I should, because I want to learn how to write television shows. So I don't know if I should see what's going on or just completely ignore what's going on and
write it yourself. Yeah, that's sort of what it feels like in this day and age. You need to be like, I'm doing my own thing, just totally out of nowhere, because there's been so much already been done. So many channels are popping up looking for content. Maybe it's time for people to just go, I am breaking out of the formula. This is my product. Do you like it?
Yeah, you know, I had to argue with a comic friend of mine last night, because the post about wanting to build things with other comics, you know, I want to record it and kind of do a, you know, web, you know, a little short web series.
Yeah.
And it kind of be a tech article, but mostly about just us doing man shit and having fun doing it. That's the whole basis of it. And then the guy that I was talking to last night, he's like, well, you need to do it like this, this, and this, so it's more marketable. And I'm like, dude, with YouTube and everything that's out there, I don't give a shit about being marketable. We make our own market now.
Yeah, you that's exactly what's happening. Like, I don't know if you watch the new Grace, there's a girl named Grace Helbig. She's replacing Chelsea Lately.
Okay.
She had a YouTube show for years. And what they've done, even though it's on TV now, they're produced and edited exactly the way it would be on YouTube.
Awesome.
Poor lighting, bad editing. It really looks like you're watching a YouTube channel on TV. And I think TV has finally grasped the fact people don't – it doesn't have to be slick anymore. We watch stuff on our phones.
Yeah, and we do not have to cater to what the television networks want, because – there are people that are making a million plus a year off of YouTube hits by producing original. It may not be the best, but they're producing original
content.
Material. Yeah. And people are going to see it.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, you know, the idea is basically just a couple of dudes sitting around building stuff. I don't want to make it some big corporate. I don't want it to be tool time. You know what I mean? That's not what I want.
There's a radio show, the computer guy, Leo Laporte. Do you ever listen to him?
No, sir.
Okay. He does a show out of L.A., and it's all about computer tech and what's up and coming. And he did a show a while back about all these smart TVs that are coming out. Everything's app-ready and internet TV and Roku and Google Chrome. And basically they're saying that they will replace the networks at one point, because if you have access to internet, you can produce a TV show. And at some point, they'll be like, are you into doll making? Well, Tuesday nights at 7 is Debbie's doll making show.
Yeah.
And that's what they're sort of predicting, that entertainment will go that way.
I agree. And I think it already is going that way. I mean, there's people in it. I'm kind of glad this show happened, because it showed that a lot of these people aren't as funny as people think they are. But there was a show on TBS there for a while that took comedians – and like people that created Vine videos, people that created Instagram videos, and YouTubers, and put them all together for comedy challenges.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these people that were doing stuff online but never on stage could not complete the challenges, where the comedians were just murdering right through everything because they were experienced at doing all this stuff.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So That's an interesting dynamic to me, where a lot of these people just I don't know where I was going with that.
Well, I think the point you're making, or if you follow your train of thought, is if you take a comic and you put him in a YouTube situation with here, do a show, I think we would do a better show than just say your average guy that goes, well, I got a camera in my basement.
Yeah. Well, there is no, like, you know this from doing auditions. You go in and do a stand-up audition for some TV show, and they've got you there in front of a producer, a director, and a cameraman, and eight other comics that are waiting to try. The comics aren't going to laugh because they don't want to make you look good. The producer and director are discussing shit. What do you think of that? You know what I mean? So yeah. Like, did you like the joke? Are you guys ripping me apart right now? Because if you're an audience member ripping me apart, I know where to go.
Yeah.
If you're a producer ripping me apart, I don't know what to do right now. You know what I mean? So when you have that live action audience, real-time response where you can find that vein when shit isn't working,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean? Like, I think they're going to have a harder time making shows that are going to consistently be good.
Yeah, you know? I know that from my days in radio when we used to go out and do live shows, because the radio DJs, the guys that went to school for it, they were uncomfortable in front of people. But when we go out on a live remote and broadcast live, I would tear it up because I now have an audience. I'm used to this. I'm going to work this crowd. You're going to hear them laughing in the background on every break.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, having that little bit of extra training is always good for TV and radio.
You know, I've gone after a couple bloggers here lately. Most bloggers just aggravate me. I appreciate people, you know, writing and putting their opinions out there, so on and so forth. My big discrepancy with bloggers is that they don't have the nuts. Like, there's a blogger that will go off on you about you. I use the word faggot on stage in reference to my gay son.
Yeah.
There's a blogger that will sit down and write all of their opinion out about me and have time to sit there and do that in a safe place with no chance of real-time recourse, where we'll go on stage and use those words trying to get laughs in an intelligent way off of words that would make people uncomfortable. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We're doing it in a crowd in a volatile situation that can change at any moment. You know what I mean? And they've got time. And I've challenged every blogger that's ever written anything negative. I'll appreciate your opinion and respect your opinion the moment you read that blog post on stage.
Right. Come sit next to me at a desk on stage and we'll debate this whole article and we'll see who wins this.
Yeah. And not only do you have to be right, but you have to be funny at the same time, you know, and you're going to have people fact checking you the entire time while you're on stage. Oh, and did I mention that your whole paycheck revolves around you being funny while you're putting your opinion out there?
Right.
You know, I hate that people do that stuff from a safe place. Like, I think and sorry if I'm getting long winded.
No, I don't mind at all.
Another thing that I think is it's really changing the dynamic of the way people think is that everything has a comment section now.
Oh, I know.
So now everybody's like, my opinion matters all the time.
No, it doesn't. Not at all. Doesn't matter at all. Especially when you're just regurgitating one I just read on another. You just stole the comment off another page.
Oh, my God, man. There was an article that came out yesterday in Playboy about how there are parody accounts that will take, say, one of your tweets, and they will not give you credit, but they'll get, 20,000 retweets on something. And now they've made $1,000 for the day because they retweeted your joke without your name.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that, and people are okay with it because of karaoke music. You know, like if you can sing Journey, why can't somebody else do your joke?
Right.
Well, everybody knows that's Journey when you're singing it, asshole. Like, not everybody knows it was my joke you're telling.
But how about you just retweet me? That's what don't steal, just retweet because people will appreciate you and me. They'll like my joke and they'll like you for sharing it with your friends.
Yeah, they're like, hey, this guy brings me new people to follow. You know what I mean? Like, there is still an honest way to do it, you know? I just hate that. It's so easy to steal. Like, I'll post Facebook jokes, which I already know they're going to get jacked in some way.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, if it gets jacked, that's my fault for putting it out there like that, you know? And then sure enough, you'll end up seeing people use it and post it. And I like it when non-comics do it. I'm just like, give me the credit, man. Just tell people that, hey, I heard this joke from this comic. Go follow him.
Yeah, you know? I don't mind when people share that, but I have a couple people, and my girlfriend's pointed out a couple other people, that blatantly just cut and paste my stuff or my jokes off Facebook as their status. And it's like, do you not care? Don't you know you're my friend? You already know you're on my friends list, so it's going to show up in my feed.
Yeah. Oh, so, he's got 1,000 friends. He'll never notice.
Yeah, or they'll just slightly reword it.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I've lost my cool a couple of times though when I've seen my jokes on memes. Like things that I've said or that I know are on my albums from years ago and they're on a meme. That drives me ape shit. Like, don't even give me credit. Like, you would, if it was Walt Whitman, you would say Walt Whitman. You know, if it was Jay Leno, you'd, but you're just stealing my joke and putting it on a meme. Mm-hmm.
So they can get, you know, 1,000 likes and, you know, and it at their desk job and it vindicates them for the day or validates them for the day. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm fucking paid on online. I don't know, man. It's scary. We're not valuing content like we used to. You know, I think music overvalues their content. Like they think that people shouldn't be allowed to steal their music. Like it's still that band playing it, though. You know
right.
what I mean?
It's still you need to pay the band for taking time out and writing it, producing it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, also, but it drives people to your live act. I'm totally okay with people posting my videos without me getting paid.
Me too. I'm okay with that too.
Long because it'll drive people to the seats, and that's where when they're like, I don't want somebody downloading my music. Well, which would you rather have? Somebody download your music and come to your shows and buy t-shirts, or somebody download your or somebody buy your music and never come to see you. You know what I mean? Or maybe come to see you, or they feel like they've already given you enough money because they bought your music. That, I don't know, doing comedy's made me change the way I think about it because now I'm like, here's everything I've ever said. Tell everybody.
You right. know, spread like, it around. Make me famous.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope I've said something that offends you so you tell a million people and I can at least argue that point. You know?
Well, I appreciate it. Well, man, thanks for coming on and doing the podcast with me. This is where you get to promote everything that you do. Tell everybody how to find you, where to find you, and what's going on.
Okay. Twitter, as you mentioned earlier, is FunBobFatPants. Facebook, just look up Bobby Wayne Stotts, Stauts. Same thing on Instagram, Bobby Wayne Stotts. What else? Oh, the podcast. I do a podcast with Brandon Hahn and Peter Spites called Rise to Offend. You've been a guest on that. Thank you very much for doing that.
And I think it's a great podcast. As a matter of fact, I just listened to the latest one yesterday.
With Jesus?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, man. Thank you very much for listening to that. And then just check me out for any shows and stuff. I got a couple shows that are coming up here in Vegas at one of the casinos and stuff like that. So if anybody wants to come out and they're in this area, please hit me up and I'll get you in. So,
well, cool, man. Thank you.
I really appreciate this, man. This was a huge honor. I've been listening to you for years.
So. Oh, thanks. Let's do it again. Like when I did the podcast with you guys, I got the same sensibility, like sitting there and listening to you and talking. I'm like, this guy and I were raised pretty much the same way. We both got a good work ethic. We want kids to be better. We want the world to be a better place. I need him on Remasculate.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I love the name. I don't know if you don't have t-shirts made yet. That's a great thing to do that because just people walking around with Remasculate on their chest.
Oh, that's not a bad idea. I haven't done that yet. That might be a really good idea. I have been talking to a guy about turning this into a possible TV show that because there's not a man show anymore. There used to be. Remember the man show on MTV? And so I've been talking to a guy that's a producer about possibly taking this theme and trying to create a new man show called Remasculate. So, yeah.
Yeah, you can go in and teach people how to be manly.
And build shit out of pallets. All right, man. Thanks for being on the show. We will definitely do it again. And I will close the show as I always do. Thanks for listening, guys. God bless America. And go listen to some Oak Ridge Boys. See you, man. Later.
See you. Later.
In the basement of the mud flap house, fluffing and poo, and they're under with the razor nose, and poo licks herself, and flap contemplates manly things. He thinks about guns and trucks and stooges three, men and boys, and that doesn't sound right. He thinks about booze. gloves and bacon and power tools. Come with me, let your mask you lay. Oh, won't you come with me and remask you lay?
Aloha!